So, kind of picking up where we left off last time, we were talking about expediency. And does anybody remember what we said about expediency? Do you have your notebook?
I thought I'd left it in here, actually.
I heard reviews.
You heard what?
I heard reviews.
Oh.
Well, there's one to the left, under the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
You need to get your two halves of the dictionary out here.
I'm
going
to write that.
Is that your notebook from middle school?
No, he got it.
No, yeah, I brought some.
They did that to us in middle school.
I
wanted to
show it out there.
There was a period of about 10 years that it just went empty and then it just like picked up by then.
So it's finding the best way to do things.
Yeah, it's trying to find a...
An
efficient way to do things while still obviously being within the realm of biblical authority. We used examples such as how to pitch a song, how to take the Lord's Supper. You know, if we're commanded to partake of the Lord's Supper, we're commanded to sing. I was even thinking about this, some more examples that came to me as I was thinking about it a little bit more this week. Having a songbook that has all the notes and everything, how are we... You know, if we're commanded to sing, well, how do we know which songs to sing? You know, just having all the songs that we know compiled into a songbook, they have the notes. So even songs if we don't know how to sing them, we have somebody who might know how to sing it or can sight read and learn how and teach us how to sing those songs. Songbooks are an expedient as well in order to fulfill the command to sing songs of praise. Let's see here. We also talked about towards the end of class, and then we were going to kind of have this list of questions that we can all kind of ask ourselves. 2 weeks back, I used the example of if we're 1 Thessalonians 5:21 or 22, if we were to abstain from every form of evil, you know, perhaps if we go to a busy restaurant, all the tables are taken up. Hey, we've got spots open at the bar top. Even if we're just going to eat food, it might not be such a good idea to go sit at the bar and wait for food because it sort of gives off the impression that we're there, we're drinking. And so, you know, we might want to stay away from that based on the perception that it could create. And that applies to expediency as well. We mentioned the example of using a piano to be able to pitch the song and how it kind of give off the implication or give off the idea that perhaps we worship with instruments. So it wouldn't be very expedient because it sort of gives off this idea that we're practicing something that we're not.
I don't see how that connects with expediency.
Like as far as...
Why does perception of... musical instruments have to do with expediency at all? Because you explain that as efficiency in doing things. I don't see the connection.
Well,
it just seems like we're misleading.
Yeah, it seems more misleading, but we also had talked about then the song leader has to know sort of the keyboard and what notes are which part of the piano. It sort of adds, I guess, more responsibility and idea, or it adds more... knowledge that perhaps most people leading songs wouldn't know. So, you know, it might not be very efficient because if they don't know the keys on a piano, you know, if we're up there to lead in the notes, then you're really minimizing the number of people who can lead songs if they have to know what...
So you're saying using the piano as a requirement for being a song. That's kind of the only way that I could see that being an issue.
Yeah.
With expediency particularly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like we talked about, you know, with like a pitch pipe, for example, you know, you sort of have the notes on there. You know, if you blow on the pitch pipe, it's not... Some people might have issue with it because you're blowing and it sounds like a harmonica or you're using an instrument. I mean, I guess if there was a way that it was most efficient, that you have a number of song leaders who would know that kind of thing. Basically, the example we used was, I think it was Mark chapter 2, with the Pharisees and John's disciples questioning Jesus and his disciples about fasting, and making sure that the circumstances were appropriate, since Jesus uses the example of being the bridegroom at a wedding to him being there on the earth, and they weren't fasting because it wasn't appropriate for them to fast, which has the idea of mourning with it at a time that, for example, as a wedding would be celebratory. It just doesn't really fit. If that makes sense. So trying to make sure that it's appropriate to the circumstances. What are you thinking?
Did you give a definition, like an actual one, of expedience? Maybe that's just, I don't know how you're defining it.
Yeah. It says, go ahead.
One of the things to me is just because it's the fastest way to do something or the most efficient way to do something doesn't mean it's the best way to do something at all.
Yeah.
Because having a conversation with somebody about why you're doing something or why you're not doing something would be better than them just not knowing that this is what you're doing because you've already decided that this is what you're doing.
Right, absolutely.
And so someone who doesn't know about it, just like us not having something up there, not having a pitch pipe, not having something, that just kind of, it just leaves it out, and maybe they go somewhere else, and then they're confused when they go somewhere else and they do have it.
Right.
And then you didn't open it up to a conversation at all, and they don't know why. Like, we've had people walk in the door here, and then they'll go, or like even grew up here, and then they'll go to college, and they went to a new church there, and they used pitch pipe, or they had someone, like, whenever they started leading the song, they were snapping, and they'd come back, and they'd go to our elders, and they're like, is that okay? Like, we've just never done that, and then it took 20 years for them to figure it out.
Yeah.
Steve is thinking about using a pitch pipe.
Yeah.
He'll just turn away, but not blow it in the microphone just so he can get it to learn it.
Right.
If you do it right, no one will hear it except for
Yeah, he did. No one can hear it.
Well, and that's the thing about, like, even, there's apps that you can use that pitch different songs. You have different apps that you can listen to.
Whenever I've done it in the past, I always use the note that I'm starting off.
So just like
The definition of expediency that we sort of gave was choosing the best way to fulfill what God has commanded within the limits and context of biblical authority. So, like you said...
So you're not saying anything about speed at all, but you're just talking about the best way.
Yeah, so again, it's not about efficiency.
That's the part of it.
And that was kind of the example we also talked about was, yeah, we found a very efficient way to do the Lord's Supper. Everybody just sort of grabs it as they come in. But is it the best way? Because now it's like, you know, you'll be two bites into, or you'll be kind of like mulling over the, you know, your thoughts on the bread. But then it's like the person's already up there like blessing the cup. And it's like, okay, can we not like have like 30 seconds to like a minute to kind of like process the bread and think of, you know, all these times? Because then it becomes like Lord's Supper's over in like 2 minutes flat. And now because we aren't passing the plates, we don't have as much time to sort of like think about those things. So yeah, again, it's not, yeah, when thinking about expediency, it's not always just the most efficient way, but it's more what is the best way that, the best way to do it so that, I'll use the example of, you sort of want some efficiency. It has to be like a balance of efficiency and again, it's not the fact that we're trying to just rush through and just kind of get through it, but what's the best way that, you know, again, we fulfill sort of those general commands. I think that really that kind of goes to growing spiritually. Again, it's like, it's not, the point isn't to rush through the Lord's Supper, but again, how do we balance being able to focus on what we're supposed to be focusing on during the Lord's Supper, but also being able to distribute the bread and the cup in a way that everybody can get it? I don't know. It's sort of, expediency is sort of this kind of, there's numerous principles and things to think about. But yeah, so what is the best way sort of to fulfill God's commands?
Life is hard to get.
Thank you. Yeah, it came from Elaine's office. I used it because it's just a little bit easier for me to see my notes than with it being so low on the table. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
That's where I used to put my computer when you uploaded by the time at the bottom.
Yeah.
Back near the router.
All right, so let's get to this week. Questions to ask. Like I said, these can apply in a way to expediency, but it can also help us in our daily lives as Christians. Questions to help us with what content we watch, the choices we make, those types of things. Question number one. Is it wrong? Sin is a transgression of the law in any form, 1 John 3, verse 4. And an activity can be condemned generally in principle just as easily as by name. So again, is what we're doing perhaps a new expedient implement to the worship assembly, or is this choice I'm about to make, is it wrong? What does the Bible say about language or modesty, or what is it wrong? Is what I'm about to do wrong? And what does the Bible say about that? Question number two. Is it right? Does God give his approval of this? Again, this very general action, whatever the case may be. We mentioned in Colossians 3:17, do all in the name of the Lord, sort of do everything with, do everything that Christ would give his approval of. We can come up with great ideas to supply our needs, to supply needs for others, but are they authorized? Again, we sort of use the example of, if we wanted to have a garage sale and then give the profits to the congregation, that's sort of something that we could do individually to give, but we don't really find a principle of sort of like a business model for the church to make money, if that makes sense. But always making sure, is what I'm doing right? Is this an approved action? Number three, does it set a good example? Christians are to let our light shine before the world, Matthew 5:14-16, and for them to see our good works and to praise God for that. How is it possible? How is that possible for us to shine our light if maybe some of the things that we might be engaged in are some questionable activities? How can we let our light shine if we're trying to be Christians, we're trying to be the example of Christ in the world, but yet perhaps we might be doing something that it's like, should a Christian be doing that? Any thoughts? Questions? Anything that sort of comes to mind maybe as we're thinking about some of these? What are some things that maybe wouldn't set a good example for others?
Saying bad words,
yeah. I know I've had some, I've known some people in the past who claim to be Christians, and yet they still continue to smoke, drink, and cuss like just like anybody else. And so whenever, they said, oh yeah, I'm a Christian, a lot of people, I'm assuming who weren't Christians, were kind of caught off guard and were surprised by that. Again, because our example, I don't want to say it's everything, but I mean, it goes a long way with people. And to be a good example, is important. Again, to be Christ in the world, to set a good example for others. This is another good one that would kind of tie in to being a good example. Would it lead others to Christ? It's something that I'm doing. What?
Are these questions you asked before you, like, do they apply towards expediency, or is it just like questions that?
I think it's a little bit of both. It's more, like I said, it can help us in our daily lives and thinking about the choices that we make. But in this particular section, it was just kind of put in the expediency realm, because these are some of the things that sometimes we have to think about before we like make a change. Again, like if we're going to try and implement something that's maybe new and a little bit more efficient in the worship assembly, making sure that we kind of run through a process of things. So it's a little bit of both. But think about it, I guess for our purposes now, let's just try and think about it as like general questions for like our daily living. So would my example lead others, would it help lead others to Christ? Or would there be a stumbling block perhaps that it would lay in front of others? Would it, does it make other people want to follow God? What are some ways that maybe, again, other than language, what's another example maybe that we could think of that would perhaps be good? Think about outbursts of anger. I mean, granted, obviously there's nothing wrong with being angry. Be angry and do not sin. But if we're just sort of like living on this short fuse all the time and just sort of like blowing up and yelling at our family when we're out, or yelling at, you know, I don't know, maybe politics or something.
Should have seen the wedding yesterday.
Oh, really?
That's when we were talking about the trees.
Oh, the trees.
When we were trying to get our last picture outside.
Yeah, that could happen. It could set other people on edge. And again, I mean, you know, we don't have to. Obviously, there's room for grace. We don't always have to be perfect. But you know, would my behavior lead others to Christ? Paul believed.
I have some questions about just application for us in a second. I have two.
Okay.
So when we're asking these questions, are there not things that are neither here nor there with question four? Just even just living your daily life, not everything is going to show leading others to Christ. So to what extent do you ask these questions? When do you know where to start?
I don't know. Like I said, I think about
Also, I'm quizzing you just because not a lot of people are here today.
No.
I wouldn't be doing this if there were more.
I appreciate it.
She's fine.
Like, I've seen it before.
Here you go. I just want you to be able to answer questions.
Yeah. I think, you know, like I said, I think it kind of, I mean, there are a lot of issues going on in the world today, and I try and, you know, I mean, June is Pride Month, you know, sometimes I think about, okay, well, what is a good way to approach the topic of homosexuality? Should it be brought up by someone I know, somebody who may be part of that community? And kind of, I guess some of these questions kind of can be a guide. I just try and think of, you know, focusing on, I know that I have to tell them, you know, if they ask, you have to tell them the truth. But trying to think about what would be the best way to, again, just be a good example to those who are around me, who those who have interaction with me.
I also think
how would you go about doing that?
A bit of a balance, because like Jesus sat and ate with sinners, and like they wanted to be around him, and I think it's kind of hard nowadays because there are so many people saying like, always let people know as a Christian what you think about their sin. And I don't think that's what Jesus did, because if the sinners like wanted to eat with Jesus, then it's not because he always was like, well, this is wrong what you're doing. You're going to go to hell if you keep doing that. Sinners aren't going to want to be around you if you keep talking like that. And so I think they're just trying to find the right balance, and is really just learning how Jesus handled other people, mm-hmm. especially how he handled people who were in sin, and using that as an example to leading others to Christ. I think that's the best way to do that. It's not always fire and brimstone and letting people know, oh, well, I don't think this is right. You're going to go to hell if you think this is right. So I think it's finding, finding a better way to do it than that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the world has a very tarnished perception of Christians nowadays, just because of the older generation and what Christianity used to be known for.
Yeah.
And hellfire and brimstone. And it's like, if somebody ever does talk about like pride or whatever with Christians, they're like, oh, you can't go to hell, aren't you? Like, I mean, not yet, you know, you're so late. You know, like,
there's still time.
Like it's just about respecting people. And that's what people aren't used to, Christians respecting their lives, other people's lives. Like, I understand, like, yes, we want to lead others to Christ, but it's a marathon, not a 100-meter race, you know?
Yeah.
I'm about what she said, you know, like, subjecting yourself to people that are in sin. Let's say you go somewhere and everybody's plastered. You went with them before, they got plastered, you didn't. You're the only one sober. They're going to ask you why. I think that's, they open the door for you to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't necessarily have to be like, what are you?
You don't pry that. They're gonna ask.
And when you say it, it's respectful and.
Yeah, you feel like, well, it's. I think this. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
And most people know they talk about.
Yeah, well, I think it's
because a lot of how our generation is.
Yeah, and a lot of people, why do they? That's kind of, this is something that I never really thought about whenever I was away, but it's like, well. Yeah, you know, it's like partying, having a good time. It only lasts for a certain while, but like, why do you drink? Why do you, you know, especially if it becomes a problem, why are you doing these things? And it almost kind of, I don't want to be like armchair psychologist, but it's like, clearly if you have to use this as an escape, or you have to use this to get, you know, away from your problems, you know, it's like, yeah, as a Christian, I still have problems, but at the same time, like, you know, I get to take those to God, and we get to work on them together. I get to pray. I guess you almost, you know, introducing it as sort of like, I don't know, like, I don't feel tied down to have to drink alcohol, or I don't feel tied down to have to do drugs, or do, you know, some sort of, I don't know, crazy stunt to sort of get like an adrenaline high in my life. Like I don't know. There are times that are hard, but for the most part, I'm at peace. And to be able to spread God that way. I know you talk about older generations, a lot of it, I think part of it is, I know I've got books that are just like soul-saving sermons. It's like, okay, but can you take this sermon and like put it into a conversation that you would have with somebody? Because I know it's like a lot of people, yeah, they would just come in the door, they would hear that sermon that would change their life, and then they were like converted. It's like, that doesn't happen. That doesn't really happen very much anymore.
I think that's because, like, mostly in the New Testament, a lot of people hadn't heard the gospel before, mm-hmm. or didn't know who Jesus was. Pretty much everyone has some kind of idea about who God and who Jesus is. Even if they don't believe in them, they still know. And so it's not as fast as it used to be now, because you kind of have to sit down with people more now and have more studies than usual, like as you see in the New Testament. It's not as fast as it was before, because people already know.
Well, yeah, it's like they have, to me, Jesus accepts me for who I am, and he accepts the sin, and it's okay. Or I know God will forgive me, or God, and they claim to have a knowledge of God, they claim to have a knowledge of Jesus, but then it's like, if you actually sit down and like study with them, it's like, oh, I didn't know this, or I didn't know this. It's like they have their own idea of who God and Jesus are, but they don't know really who they are in the Bible.
No. They don't know the alluring aspects.
Right.
Because all they've heard is from older people now. They don't reach out for conversations anymore because they think that's all there is.
Right.
Well, it's just like it's so easy to access information now with internet. So, like, me, I know stuff about Catholicism or Buddhism just because you can Google it and find the structures of the foundation and everything, but until you have a conversation with somebody in depth, that's very valuable. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And people use the internet to gain quick, rash judgments about something, and then they're already gone. They're already turned off from the aspect of God at that point.
Yeah.
Just because they were read one sentence from the Seventh-day Adventist or whatever. They read some, you know, like they just read a sentence from their website and they just associated it with all Christianity.
Yeah. Well, like I saw,
I know I understand it's like Christianity is.
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of people are turned off because they're, we were watching this video of someone yesterday. They were kind of going through like social media posts, and I think it was like entitled Karens or something. And like someone from a school asked, "Should we have classes about like mental health and depression and stuff like this?" And one lady responded, "Well, if you were a Christian, you wouldn't have these problems because Jesus heals all." And I'm like, stuff like that makes people not want to listen to you.
It's like instead of these classes on mental disorders and depression, we need Bible classes in our schools.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like, it's really, I want to see what y'all think about this. Teaching and going to a public school, it is very uncomfortable. I've been a Christian my whole life. It is very uncomfortable for me when we pray before stuff, before we do anything with like meet at the pole or whatever.
Well, that one's voluntary now.
I know. That's fair. Since
that one's voluntary.
But like when we're at like a pep rally and someone prays, it rubs me the wrong way because you're forcing everyone there to pray, even though there's a bunch of just non-Christian there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And there's a lot of people that don't believe in praying, and I just think there's a better. And like we had a teacher when I was in high school that just could not stand the thought of it because they were forcing her to sit in there while we prayed. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that just rubs people the wrong way. We're not a Christian school, it's public. So like, we could easily get in trouble for doing some things related with Christianity or something.
At Sunnyvale High School, the football team, they all take turns with different denominations of everyone who's there, leading the prayer, how they do it, and I think there are different religions besides Christianity and Sunnyvale, mm-hmm. I'm sure. And so they'll all take turns throughout the season, and just if it's not your turn or it's something that's different, you sit there out of respect that they sat there for you.
Yeah.
And that's how they dealt with it, at least on their football team when I was in high school.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, though, it's something that you're not required to do.
Well, that was also just really uncomfortable because the guy
said,
he said,
Dear Daddy. Oh, I was like, yeah, no. Dear Daddy God.
And then, like, they're just singing, like, all these Baptist songs. Like, there's a worship band up there.
They had it going, man. I was like, ooh, man.
It was so funny. Well, like, we're with her family, so we're all just sitting there. And they play that first guitar strum, and everybody stands up.
And my dad, he said, nope. And there was five of us just sitting here. I was so uncomfortable. I was like, why can't we just stand?
We could just not sing. Just sit here.
Oh, it was crazy.
And this one girl was just in the front, just singing everywhere. I think she was singing. I don't even know.
About to be spiritual gifts just flying out of her fingertips. Yeah. I think
we need Bill to start dressing like a young guy, you know, like give him some Vans, give him some skinny jeans and a corduroy, you know.
Every now and then I see like the youth pastors these days, and it'll be like this like tan, like long shirt. And it's got like, it's almost like a long U-neck. And then there's like all these different like shell braids and like shell necklaces and stuff. And it's, I forget what his name is. He's a comedian. It's like a comedic actor from some show. Because it's gotten to the point now where, you know, I mean, Hollywood, they're like making movies and entertainment to like really kind of poke fun at mega churches and stuff like that.
As they should. I had a friend who worked at like some of the mega churches in one of the mega churches in Dallas, and I asked, "Oh, so is that a mega church?" And she got mad. Like, you don't want to call it that. Like, it's
you don't want to call it what it is.
Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think for a long time, kind of winding this down, for a long time, there's been a lot of reliance on sort of getting people to the worship assembly, the soul-saving sermons. There's been a lot of emphasis on sort of being in the worship and getting people to worship. But as you say, I mean, we're living in a different world now. We're not living in an Acts 2 world. I heard at PTP one time is that we're not living in an Acts 2 world where you can sort of just get up and preach and then just like win souls like they were back in the 50s and 60s. We're living in an Acts 19 world where you've got God and Jesus, you've got Christianity and all its different flavors and colors, which is not even really true Christianity. You've got Buddhism, you've got Hinduism, you've got atheism, you've got all these other world views, and it's more of it's an Acts 19 world in which, you know, Paul was there in Greece and Mars Hill, and he's looking around at all these different, you know, they had all these different temples and idols set up for all these different gods. And it's like we're living in a world that, yeah, they might have an understanding and awareness of Jesus Christ and of God, but then there are just so many other ideas that are out there. And we, as a church, haven't been getting out and spreading the gospel. We haven't been sharing New Testament Christianity as the Bible fits it. We've been relying on teachers, elders, ministers, you know, to kind of like fill that void in the worship service. So it's like most of the times, yeah, you can get up and preach a sermon on baptism, you'll get a bunch of amens, but it's like everybody in there is already saved. And so it's like, we need to focus and shape how we work on saving the lost going forward. And, you know, as much as we want to put up a fight and bring prayers back into our schools, like you said, other people, it's just going to slam the door on them. They don't want to be subjugated to this, you know, belief system. And we need to find a better, more expedient way of doing that and to share it with others, because currently the what's been, I'll just do this one last little comment. I saw they're doing this brotherhood-wide door knocking campaign. It was like they did one, I think it was 2019, the year before COVID. They were like, hey, you know, we would like 1,000 churches of Christ to get together and like commit to this and go out and door knock. So they're doing like a second year this year, and it's like their second annual one. And one guy commented and was like, man, you know, door knocking is not efficient and it doesn't work and da da da. And man, there were so many people that were commenting. It's like, all right, what's a better way? It's like, even if you knock 300 doors and out of the 299, only one of them comes to your service and is baptized, well, then it was worth the 300, the other 299 doors you knocked. But it's like, I mean, I get it. Cold calling isn't for everybody. And most people aren't receptive to cold calls, just, you know, knocking on your door. Hey, you know.
I'm
not interested.
On where you go, because, like, we did door knocking in Costa Rica, and everyone was so receptive. Like, they'd be like, hey, come to our house and have a Bible study. Like,
right.
But here, they're like, peeking through the curtains, and they're like, oh, I don't know, I'm not going to open the door.
Exactly. But it's like, this doesn't work. You know, nobody does this. It's like, all right, well, then what's your effective way of evangelism? What's your effective way of getting out? He never commented and responded. It's like, we can literally slam the door on all sorts of other, you know, door knockings or whatever. It's like, we say, oh, it doesn't work, we're not going to do it. But then it's like, okay, what are we going to do to fill its place? Well, and so,
I think Church of Christ is just at a massive disadvantage right now, especially here, because with Vista and Central Baptist, not really Pointview anymore, but those are the three main, or Sea Life even, so now more than Pointview, they have such a fun view of Christianity, even though it's just feel-good Christianity. It's not none of the...
That's how it is. My college, we got 40 Baptist churches up there, one Church of Christ. And, you know, so you tell somebody Church of Christ, like...
Oh, yeah, people are so...
Oh,
I got friends that are crazy, and I'm like, you go to church, man? It's like, yeah! I'm like, that's crazy!
Could have fooled me!